Welcome, saints and friends, back to the Building People podcast, where we're having edifying conversations about life, ministry, and culture. I am your host, Derek J. Murphy, and I'm so pleased to have you with me today. I want to appreciate you for clicking that play button and spending a little bit of time. Before we get into anything else, I want to ask you to visit my website, derekjmurphy.com. That's DereckJMurphy.com. Take a look around at some of the merch that we have available there. Read through some of the blogs. And I promise you, if you enjoy this podcast, that website will be a blessing to you as well. This is all an extension of my ministry and my business. So when you support that website, you support this podcast. So just like always, let's get to a praise report. So as a podcaster, I really enjoy listening to podcasts as well. And today's praise report is an offering of suggestions, if you will, that if you enjoy this podcast, I believe that you will enjoy these particular podcasts, especially the episodes that I'm going to suggest as we go through this time of protest and consciousness due to the death of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery, and the response that has come because of it. And so I want to offer to you three podcasts that you should listen to as soon as you can. Number one, Clean Ears. Clean Ears is a podcast that talks about godly living and Christian lifestyle for young adults with the hip hop soundtrack. The hosts, Saritha and Simone, are very real and transparent when they present whatever it is that they're talking about. But particularly on episode 106, We've Got Work to Do, they discuss what doing enough looks like, which is something that I've been preaching all through this time, that enough is looks different for different people. And so they offer some really good suggestions as to how to navigate through these times of protest and consciousness. Number two is We Talk Different. We Talk Different is a podcast that explores the intersections of race, ethnicity, and gender in culture, politics, and theology. Now, I will admit, this particular podcast is typically for a theological thinker or a seminary student, someone with a deeper palate for the scriptures and for the study of the word. But in episode 161 and 162, hosts Ashley, Elijah, and Ryan really get raw and real about their feelings during these times of protest and consciousness. Now, it is a Christian podcast, but these two episodes are explicit. So be warned that they're going to use some words that you probably think that Christians shouldn't use, but their raw and realness really penetrates the heart so that you can really feel what they're feeling and probably give some articulation to the feelings that you are probably feeling as well. Last but certainly not least is Pass the Mic, brought to you by The Witness, which is a Black Christian collective, and it is hosted by a friend of the pod and former guest of the pod, Tyler Burns. On George Floyd and the Unjust Nation on the Brink, Tyler sits down with the president of The Witness, Jamar Tisby, who is a historian, and they talk about how this nation is on the brink of something and the possibilities of what that something could be. And then on the episode Righteous Black Anger with Dante Stewart, Tyler sits down with writer Dante Stewart, who really gives a lot of insightful commentary to Black Christians in white spaces, whether it be in church or in the workforce. And so let me encourage you to find and listen to these podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts. And no, this is not sponsored by anybody. I'm not being paid to shout out these podcasts, but they have personally been edifying to me. And so I want to pass that along to you, because these are great opportunities for you to learn and listen to some other voices that can build you up in these trying times. So before we get into this interview, I just want to apologize for the quality of sound. I don't know what happened to my mic to make it sound the way that it does during this interview, but the content is valuable. So sit back and take a listen to this and be encouraged. All right, I'm excited today to have our guest with us. She's a busy lady, and I really want to first say thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to have a conversation with us today. We're going to welcome all the way from St. Louis by way of Dallas, Texas, with a quick stop in Texarkana, Jasmine Crockett. Thank you for joining us today.
No, thank you for having me. It's a complete honor. And as you just mentioned, a quick stop in Texarkana. Texarkana plays a huge role in my life and me becoming the woman that I am today. So I'm thankful for this opportunity to kind of get back to TK a little bit.
That's what's up. All right. So the first question that I ask all of my guests is, first of all, what do you do to build people and why?
Yeah, so my everyday life is that of being a legal practitioner. And, you know, I think on an everyday basis, the people that I'm representing, I'm always trying to give them hope and make them realize that even if you've made a mistake or even if you've been accused of something and you actually were not involved in it, it's not the end of the world. You've got to figure out how to come out better on the other side, even if you did do wrong. And so I'm always encouraging them that it's just not the end and you can rise out of the ashes. So that's something that I do as it relates to those that I represent. As it relates to those that are coming behind me, I am continually encouraging those that are in law school or those that are looking at law school and letting them know that we need them. I can't do this forever. I'll only be on this earth for so long. But I do want to encourage the next generation to be bigger and better than I am. And so I do consistently work with students.
Oh, that's good because, okay, I'm a teacher and I teach eighth grade. And I had a conversation with a student through distance learning that we've had to do since COVID-19. And one of the things that, you know, she was wanting to express, you know, in going forward with her academic career is that she wanted to eventually be someone who worked in politics or civil rights. And I told her that, you know, mostly people that work in either one of those fields do something else. What advice could you give to students that are feeling the pressures of this moment and are wanting to do something? What advice could you give them that they can do academically and professionally?
Yeah, so my advice to students has always been, follow your passion. So don't feel as if, oh, because I want to get involved in civil rights or politics that I must take the route of being a political science major or I need to do something involved with government per se in school. Just excel in the area that you can excel in. And usually we do best in areas that we like. So if you're a math buff, then do your math thing. Once you graduate, you can do whatever you want to. And, you know, going through college or even going through law school, it's more so about making sure that you can set your sights on a long-term goal and actually accomplish that goal. But the things that you're going to need to know for the field, you'll learn them really when you get out, or you'll learn them through activities that you specifically put yourself into. So I believe in making sure that people can excel and getting the best grades that they can get to make sure that they can maximize the educational monies that are available for them. So for instance, I was a business major. I didn't do anything with political science whatsoever, anything that would have made you think that I would go to law school. But it led to me getting a full ride to law school because I excelled in business. I was really good at math and statistics and economics and things like that. And so I did get a full ride to attend law school. And then I was able to kind of transition into those areas that mattered most to me. I got involved in political campaigns and things like that. So I think that if that's your passion, I think you're never too young to get involved in a political campaign, or even right now, we're obviously in the midst of a modern day civil rights movement. And so you can go out there and march. You can go and speak to people that are organizing protests. You can get involved on a grassroots level. But when it comes to school itself, just do what you do best. Do the things that you like, because you'll do really well.
Yeah, everything that you're going to need to know, you will learn on the job, because they'll ask you to have a college degree and then they'll still train you. So, yeah. And so it's about using your influence on the back end of that is what I was trying to get over to her, is that, you know, it's not about, you don't pay the bills by being a civil rights leader. You do something else to gain that influence in order to be effective in the movement.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, I appreciate you sharing that. So you were a business major. I didn't know that. How did you transition into defense law?
That's interesting. It actually all happened in Texarkana. So I went to Texarkana after law school, and I was working for a firm where we did more corporate type of law. We were doing class action defense work for corporations, and I just didn't like it. In fact, I didn't know why I ever became an attorney. And at that time, they were starting a public defender's office in Texarkana. And I said, you know, when I initially got to law school, I really wanted to be a trial attorney. I wanted to be in the courtroom. And by the time I graduated law school, I said, well, I definitely don't want to work in the criminal world, because people may try to harm me if they don't like what I do. So I was like, I don't think I'm going to do that. But when they decided to open a public defender's office, I was like, at least it will get me into trial. And so I applied, and I ended up transitioning over to the public defender's office with no experience. So I was constantly reading the code, and I kind of just fell in love with it. And I also just kind of fell in love with the people that I was representing. Because there were so many people that were getting caught up in the system that weren't bad people. It wasn't kind of what I imagined on the outside looking in. And truly, it hurt me to leave the public defender's office because I was like, who's going to care for these very good people that have been caught in bad situations, whether it was domestic violence situations and someone made decisions because they were just trying to survive, or whether it was someone who was falsely accused of domestic violence and now their lives were going to be flipped upside down, or, you know, just a long list, or if it was, you know, a 17-year-old kid that made a mistake. And unfortunately, we didn't have the most progressive team of prosecutors that, you know, felt like even though it's a 17-year-old kid that does something stupid, it's time to go ahead and prosecute them to the fullest. So I really did fall in love with indigent defense while I was in Texarkana working as a public defender.
Well, that leads to an interesting point that I've been trying to make as it relates to this movement. A lot of people have been, questioning, you know, why was this particular moment so huge? And I think for me, it pronounces the fact that as a society, we dehumanize criminals and we don't see them for people who, and, you know, I'm a preacher, so there's some theology as to not whether or not people are good inherently, but that's not the issue. We no longer see criminals, those who have been arrested, have a record, even a conviction. We no longer see them as human beings. We see them as something else, which is why if somebody dies in the hands of or in the custody of police, you know, we rationalize, well, they must have deserved it. How is it that we have gotten to that place as a society, from your perspective, that we have dehumanized criminals?
You know, I think it just goes back to the history of policing in general. You know, this country has a sordid history of police and race relations. And I think for far too long, to be a criminal has been equated with being Black. And so it's not just a dehumanization of criminals, it's overall this association with Blackness, unfortunately. Now, granted, that pours over, but I think that it's a longstanding culture of policing. And when people say, you know, it's not about color or whatever things that they want to say. It is about color, but I think that the color that people don't focus on that should be focused on is blue. And I think that it's the blue. That's why you can have officers of all different races that are participating in the dehumanization of individuals. We saw even in Mr. Floyd's situation that there, you know, the ringleader was a white man, and then there was another white man, but then there was an Asian man and someone who looks like he could be black. So it seems as if blue is the issue and it's the culture of policing that is the problem. But it's so ingrained in what policing is and what they do, you know, and the bad part is when it comes down to it, I mean, you know, we've not been able to move the needle as far as legislation on criminal justice reform because people normally advocate for those that are filling their campaign pockets, right?
Yeah,
so it's normally not those that are sitting in prison that are, you know, donating to campaigns. It's those that are in the pharmaceutical industry. It's Mothers Against Drunk Driving. It's the NRA. It's everything but those that are sitting in prison. And right. So it's easy enough to forget them. It's easy enough to say, well, we're going to make money off of them one way or another. And so, you know, therefore, we've got our modern day slavery when it comes to our prison system overall. And so it's hard to have a solid voice for criminal justice when it comes to legislation, because they're not the ones that are paying. Instead, it's the people that own the prisons that are putting money into the pockets of politicians. And so it leads to kind of just this continual cycle where no one is advocating for real reform because there's no money in doing so.
Yeah, you're right. I think that, you know, there are people who have a heart for those that have been caught into the criminal justice system. But like you said, it's not lucrative. It's not sexy. It's not something that can get you a lot of clout or fame, because again, nobody really sympathizes with those who have gotten caught up.
Yep.
So with all of that's been going on in light of the current climate of the world and the protests that have been happening around the country, you have been doing some very specific things in your city to help those who have been in the protests. What exactly has been your role in light of recent events?
Yeah. So historically, I've always offered my services pro bono to peaceful protesters.
Now, for the people in the back, help us with pro bono. Okay.
So I've always offered my services for free, my legal services for free, for those that are peacefully protesting and unfortunately taken into custody. With me doing civil rights work, there's just a special place that protesters hold in any case that I'm dealing with. And so this isn't the first time that I've said, hey, if somebody gets in trouble, give me a call. This time was different though, because law enforcement saw larger numbers of protests than they've ever seen before. They decided to over police. And so after I, you know, kind of sent out the bat signal, like, call me if you need me, thinking that, you know, maybe a couple of people, the most I've ever had, I think, is 9 people be part of a protest and I have to kind of go in and help out. We literally did a tweet that at this point in time has been seen close to 1 million times and retweeted thousands of times. And that's just on Twitter. It went all over all of social media. And so my phone would not stop ringing. And I had to put together an entire team of lawyers. And now there's a team of over 30 lawyers and I don't know how many law students that have volunteered as well to kind of be able to sift through and strategically work on making sure that peaceful protesters are not prosecuted. And if they are, to make sure that we beat the charges and we clear their records. So that's what I've been doing ever since the protest started in Dallas. We had to expand to Denton County and expand to Tarrant County as well. But thankfully, the calls have slowed down and police seem to have slowed down a little bit. They absolutely were overzealous. They absolutely were using unreasonable force on peaceful protesters. They were incarcerating like crazy. So all of that has kind of slowed down and everybody's kind of, you know, back to acting like civilized persons. Right. And so I'm hoping that, you know, I don't have to worry about anyone else being incarcerated as this movement continues.
Well, you said, you know, acting like civilized people. One of the things that I kept hearing people talking about, the protesters acting uncivilized, discounting the fact that the police, I mean, and I've seen it in just about every city where I've seen coverage. It's not just protesters that are wilding out. It's the police as well reacting to the moment that are also acting, quote unquote, uncivilized.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been, you know, it's sad because from what I've seen, it's been more of a problem on the policing side than the protester side. Obviously, we've all seen the defacing and we've seen the looting occur. It's been minimal compared to the problematic attitudes and nature of law enforcement. You know, Dallas, I'm pretty sure, was seen all over national news because literally they were trying to arrest almost 700 protesters on the Margaret Hunt Bridge. And they decided to gas them. They shot them with some sort of projectile other than a bullet. You know, I don't know if it was rubber, wooden, sponge, whatever. But they were shooting these people and they were gassing these people. And they weren't doing anything. They weren't even near anything that could have been looted. There were no businesses nearby. They were corralled onto the bridge. That's where they were directed to go. And then it was literally, they trapped them. And it's ridiculous that this is what we do. I'm like, you're complaining that, you know, we need more money for law enforcement and we're down in officers. But this is how we spend our money. We had state law enforcement, federal law enforcement, city law enforcement, all for peaceful protesters that had done nothing wrong. And then to decide to treat these people this way. And I mean, we had kids. Right. It just made no sense. And so, you know, I'm like, this is why you get people that do want to throw things at law enforcement or do want to burn things down, because you start it, you instigate, you know, this situation. So, you know, luckily all of them remained peaceful no matter what. They still did not do anything to law enforcement, even though law enforcement was truly violating their civil rights.
Right. That's crazy. My goodness. That's disheartening, because, you know, I think what it ends up being is that, yeah, protest, as long as you protest peacefully, unless you're protesting against me. You know what I mean? That attitude that as long as you're not talking about me, yeah, you can protest, which, you know, the whole taking a knee thing, I think that was a situation where people are like, you know, yeah, protesting is fine. You have your right to protest as long as it's something that, you know, doesn't affect me directly. But in light of what you're doing to help the protesters, what are some other things? Because you've taken a step to do something outside of being on the front lines while simultaneously, I might add, being on the front lines. My goodness, you haven't missed a step with being in the protest as well as representing those who had been arrested as well. But so what are some other things that people could do besides protesting if individuals want to help the movement without actually hitting the streets?
Yeah, so you can always donate to causes, for sure. You know, right now I'm trying to encourage people to prioritize their Black dollars. Or prioritize their dollars in general. Black people are the number one consumers in this country. And so in the midst of COVID, with so many government officials saying, hey, let's reopen the economy, what they're saying is we need Black people to spend their money. And right. So there's truly some value in our dollars. And so I would just encourage people that if you're truly committed to the movement, it's about making sure you prioritize how you spend your dollars. There are organizations that are putting money towards criminal justice reform so that hopefully the lobbying can begin, so that there are elected officials that feel inclined to do something as it relates to criminal justice reform. I know Jay-Z is one of those that's kind of leading the charge when it comes to criminal justice reform. And so donating to causes like that, there are a number of families that have lost family members to police brutality, and they've started nonprofits, and their whole goal is reform. So donating to them, you know, in the short term, obviously, there were a number of organizations that were collecting money for bail for protesters that were being jailed. We probably will start a legal defense fund, because once we get cases dismissed, it's still going to cost to have cases expunged. But overall, just prioritizing your dollars in general. And, you know, if there's an opportunity to choose a Black business over, say, a business that does not support Black issues, or just making sure that you're diverting your money towards, even if it is a large corporation, towards a corporation that supports the Black Lives Matter movement. So I think that's something easy for everyone to do, is to kind of prioritize their dollars. We're spending them anyway. Just make sure you're spending them in a way that doesn't contradict what it is that we say that we're trying to move towards.
Well, you know, the very day that I saw your post about helping those who had been arrested, I had done a Facebook Live, you know, because so many people were, I don't want to misuse a word, so I'm being careful here. A lot of people were kind of complaining about those who did not go to the streets and protest. And my point that day was, there are other ways to help this movement, because if you look back at Dr. King, it wasn't just him marching or making speeches that made that movement effective, but they also had people in the court systems that were filing lawsuits, that were bailing people out and clearing records and all of those things, that all of the work that you're doing, as well as, you know, church folks praying or providing water, providing support for those who were protesting. All of those steps and all of those things are necessary for the movement to continue, because it's not going to happen just at the grassroots level. There has to be a multifaceted approach, because we're playing chess, not checkers.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And there are people that keep asking, you know, what are the next steps? What happens next? And the reality is that marching is great for getting someone's attention. That's what it's great for. And we're doing that. It's right. Getting the word out. It's getting the attention. But you do have to take it steps further. And there have been those that haven't been able to march that have provided food and water and snacks and that kind of stuff. And then there's other people that literally are pushing for legislative and policy changes, which is kind of the ultimate goal. That's right. The ultimate. That's kind of where we have to get to. So there are people that are going out to these protests. They're registering people to vote. They're educating people about candidates. They're educating people about election dates. They're doing all of that. And then, you know, there will be a big push to actually get people to the polls. And there's a big push to make sure that people that have their hearts in the right place are actually running for office as well.
That's right. That's right. Because you can't just ask for these changes without some people being willing to step up to the plate and make those changes. We're going to double back to that, but I got to ask this. If a person does decide to protest, if they decide to go hit the streets and they want to make that statement, and they're well within their rights to, what rights should they be aware of when it comes to marching and protesting, just in case they come into contact with overzealous law enforcement?
So what I always tell people is make sure that you don't spit or throw or hit law enforcement. You can cuss all you want to. You can say anything that you want to, but do not escalate that past words. You always want to be mindful of the streets. They love to charge people with obstruction of a highway. It is a great way to get somebody's attention to kind of stop traffic, but that may be a problem. So if you can, try to stay on the sidewalk. Other than that, you know, I would just be very cooperative, even if they take you into custody.
Yeah.
And you should always have a plan. You should plan for going into custody and make sure that you've got somebody that you can call, if that's, you know, a friend or a relative who's going to make sure that there's a lawyer that knows what's going on so that you can get out ASAP.
Now, that's interesting. I've never thought about that, that if you're going to protest, you should plan to be detained.
In my opinion, you should. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Yeah, so, that's really good advice. I like that.
So most people, so a lot of times I'll show up to a protest at the very beginning. I'll talk to a crowd. I'll let them know the things that they should not do. You know, the basic stuff about not looting and whatnot. But I give them that information, but you should plan to go to jail. Because if you go to jail and you didn't plan for it, then you're in this situation where you're stuck and nobody knows and whatnot. So I think it's always better to be safe than sorry.
That's really good. I appreciate you sharing that. You know, people, whatever it is that you have decided to do to help the movement, the whole point of it, I believe we should take away from this conversation is that if you said a very good cliche, and it's cliche because it's true. If you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. And if you are prepared for what's on the other side of, you know, your protest or your action, you are thinking ahead and coming up with a comprehensive way to make a big difference. And I think that that is more important than responding out of our emotions, but to be strategic in the ways that we advance this movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the other ways that you are thinking ahead and expanding your influence and helping those that you see that need help, you're running for office. Could you tell us about your campaign?
Yeah, so I am running for state representative, House District 100, and essentially it's the type of race that people don't normally pay attention to. Usually people pay attention to the presidential campaigns that come around once every 4 years. We consistently see throughout the country that that's when we have our highest turnout. Unfortunately, we need people to come out and make sure that they're paying attention to who's writing our state laws, make sure they're paying attention to who's being elected to the city level as well. The laws that we write on the federal level have the ability to influence us in our lives so much quicker than, say, anything that the president does. And on average, the average person has no idea who their state rep is, no idea who their state senator is. And, you know, part of that is on us. The other part is on candidates. I think that candidates don't make the effort that they need to get in front of people's faces and educate them about what it is that our jobs are and the things that we can do and the power that we hold. So, like I said, the job is to write the laws for the state of Texas. And, you know, it's a job that really is beyond less than thankful. Besides the fact that no one pays attention, the position pays $7,000 and you go to Austin for 6 months, once every 2 years. And so when you say that our system is broken or, you know, there's problems within our criminal justice system or the laws as they're written, it starts with Austin. And the reality is that the everyday person can't be heard in Austin because the everyday person can't afford to go to Austin. Most people can't say, hey, I'm going to take off for 6 months, hold my job while I go live in this other city where I'm going to make $7,000 and I'll be right back. That's just not realistic. And so we very rarely have the everyday voice being heard in Austin. And so it only makes sense that Texas is one of the leading states when it comes to mass incarceration, or when we look at the inequities when it comes to minorities. It has a lot to do with who holds the power, and that's those that go to Austin. So I think that it's important that we make an effort to find out who is setting the policy for how we're policed, who's setting the laws in the state of Texas. And I really do hope to kind of set a different bar and make people start asking those questions and wanting to know who their reps are and the things that their reps are fighting for and really get engaged in these types of races.
Yeah, I think this is a magic moment for us to truly educate the public about elections and politics, because the most impactful politics are the local elections. And so whether you're talking about your state representatives and or your state senate, or you're talking about your mayors and city council people, county commissioners and judges, as well as your congressional representatives for the House of Representatives in Washington and for the U.S. Senate. Those races are very, very, very important because these are the people that make the laws. And if you ignore those races, you're actually doing yourself the most disservice, because that's where the actual change can really happen. And so I encourage every person, no matter what state you're in, take 15, 20 minutes to look over who's running in your area for those positions in the House of Representatives or your state House of Representatives or state Senate or the U.S. Senate or even your very local city or county levels. Take a look and see who's running, see what they're running, what issues they're running on, what things are important to them. And if they align with your belief system, get out to the polls and vote. It may be an inconvenience, but I would rather be inconvenienced at the polls than to be inconvenienced in my life. So get out there and vote. And so before we go, could you please give us your information where people can find you on social media, or if they want to donate to your campaign, no matter what state they're from?
Yeah, so everything for my campaign is Jasmine 4100. So that's JASMINE, the word for, FOR, and then the number 100. That's on all social media platforms. I don't think there's a social media platform that we're not on. And that's the same thing for my website, which you can donate there. You can also volunteer. It doesn't matter where you are. If you agree with the positions that I take and my stance and the things that I want to change here in the state of Texas, obviously we're dealing with COVID-19. And so we're making lots of phone calls. We're doing text messages. So you can live anywhere and volunteer, even if you can't donate. So I do appreciate the opportunity to share with you today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've not been in TK in a second, especially in the midst of COVID. I usually pop in and pop out. So it was good to have this time to share with you today.
So this is the part of the episode where I open up the doors of the church for anyone who needs to come down and repent. And this week I'm calling on Michael Omeria. He is the head of the New York State Police Benevolent Association, and he went off on the media Tuesday at a press conference saying, and I quote, "Stop treating us like animals and thugs and start treating us with some respect." I'm going to just let that marinate for just a moment. Stop treating us like animals and thugs and start treating us with some respect. He went on to say, We all read in the paper all week that in the Black community, mothers are worried about their children getting home from school without being killed by a cop. What world are we living in? That doesn't happen. It does not happen. Bruh, come on now. Come on. What do you think we've been doing for the past few years, screaming in the streets that Black lives matter? What do you think Colin Kaepernick took a knee for? Or are you still under the illusion that he is disrespecting the flag? No, we have been talking about this for years, about how police brutality is something that needs to be checked, that the lives of Black Americans ought not be reduced to that of animals and thugs. We've been saying the exact same thing to you for years. And if you can't take the heat that you've been receiving for the past few weeks, just imagine how Black Americans have felt for the past 400 plus years. Come on, bruh. Well, that's it. Another episode done. Thank you for listening today, and I want to give a great big shout out to Jasmine Crockett. If you would like to connect with her and what she's doing in the 100th District of Texas, make sure to connect with her at jasmineforone100.com. You can donate, you can volunteer, and you can connect to her social media from that site. Make sure to follow me at I Am Derrick J. Murphy across all social media platforms. Well, except for Snapchat and TikTok, because I don't do that. Make sure that you share this podcast with someone who needs to hear it. If it's been an encouragement to you, I'm sure it'll be an encouragement to someone else. And if you didn't enjoy it, well, just act like you didn't hear it. It's fine. We'll be okay. So until next time, be blessed and know that God loves you best, and I love you best I can. Take care. Peace.